Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
Take
it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Merry Christmas. Hope you are enjoying the holiday week. We've got a lot to talk about, all including UFC 168. We will be playing nothing but Usher all day because he's apparently going to walk out with Anderson on Saturday night. So that is real.
That's a real thing.
That is a real thing. The Usher thing is totally real.
Huh.
So I figured we'd play Usher.
Are you a fan of that, Sean? Walkouts with superstars?
Could you stop playing Angry Birds?
Oh, is he on his phone?
He's
I'm sorry.
Angry Birds 7 or Candy
he's
Crush
busy.
Or
he's,
what are you doing
he's
over
there? He's texting about hating Christmas.
On the air.
I'm following up the Usher.
Okay.
He's looking him up, seeing what the kids are talking about.
The show is brought to you, as always, by Gun Lake Casino, on its supplements, and you can get us as part of the Fight Fans Radio Network on Stitcher, on iTunes, and on iHeartRadio, so there's lots of places to find us as we continue through the holidays. We will have a show next week as well, so there's no holiday break for the show as we push through. Talking about UFC 168.
Hold on, Eric, just for a second.
Yes.
Just speaking of the holidays, even though Sean hates Christmas.
He does hate Christmas.
I did bring him in a little something. There's a gift bag over there on your side of the room, Sean. If you could just just want to open that up there and see what did you get there
you
for Christmas?
You are dead to me.
It's what? Yes, there you go. It's Brock Lesnar with Paul Heyman, Death Clutch. It's the story of the most athletic heavyweight in UFC history. The most money-making pay-per-view star in UFC history.
I know what to do when my fireplace goes cold now.
You do, but before you do that, I need to bring Joe up here because he has something to ruin Christmas that you already hate.
Well, yes, why is everyone picking on me right now, dude?
He didn't do it intentionally, but he was digging up statistics for us to talk about UFC 168. Joe, come over to Kent's mic.
Come over here so people can actually hear you.
Tell us what you found.
Only seven UFC fights have gone over a million pay-per-view buys. Guess who was a headline for those seven?
You know what? I'm leaving,
Brock
dude.
Lesnar.
You know, there's a
more than half
breakfast buffet I just saw on the way in here.
There is a breakfast buffet.
You can sit there and relax with your book, get a coffee, and read about how you can become a UFC star.
So, Merry Christmas to you, even though you hate the holiday, which is fine.
He's just staring. He's mean mugging Brock Lesnar on the book cover.
Who is
like you went out of your way to get this?
I wouldn't call it out of your
way. Out of the way. Yeah, but I mean, like you went to Amazon.
I have 10 copies, Sean. When you walk in my house,
is
usually people
signed?
Get one.
If it's not signed, I don't want it.
Oh, man,
dude.
That'd be awesome.
I would get it signed.
Oh, that would be awesome. Look at you.
Well, that would be above and beyond. Like, he totally went above and beyond and got you a signed copy.
Merry Christmas.
Look, thanks for you giving me a gift.
Yes.
But the gift
sucks,
man.
Enjoy it.
And then before we get on with UFC 168, I want to say congratulations once again. A big year, 2013, for Kevin Lee, who got engaged. So congratulations.
Yeah, right.
You know, that was a little Christmas gift that he gave his girlfriend, now fiance.
Is he still big-timing us?
He is.
Still not on the show?
He will not talk to me, but I wanted to wish him congratulations regardless.
We'll drag him in here soon.
I mean, I did show up Wednesday night for that jiu-jitsu thing, and nobody was there, so I think you were playing me.
He big-timed you in person.
You did not show up Wednesday night.
I know I did. Just calm down, dude.
Because that's last night.
Why do you take everything?
Or no, that was the other night.
Wow, you take everything so seriously. Okay, UFC 168. It is their big.
No, because I take jiu-jitsu pretty seriously.
Brock's got them all worked up.
I know.
I should have waited till the end of the show.
You should have, because we were totally ruined after the rest of the show. Right.
UFC 168.
Moving on.
Their New Year's card, it's quickly becoming their biggest. I think at one point, Ken, we would have argued that the Super Bowl card was their bigger card, but it seems as of late, they're stacking the deck this way and making this kind of the big way to go out of 2013 or 2012, respectively, whatever you're talking about. And this, two huge fights. You've got Chris Weidman and Anderson Silva. The big question is what everyone's been asking. Did Anderson Silva beat himself last time, or does Chris Weidman really have what it takes to beat the Spider a second time and essentially, as we talked about last week, cement his legacy on the pound-for-pound list, because beating Anderson twice is something that has, quite frankly, never been done.
Yeah, and you know what? I think it's if Anderson would have lost to, like, let's say, decision, or he, you know, let's say you lost to a submission. Let's say, but when you get knocked out, man, that sits in your head, and that's a play. You know, you got some demons to deal with, and you're like, you know what? Yeah, I was playing the game and I was being stupid, whatever. But I woke up and all of a sudden everyone was in the cage and I was asking, why are these people in the cage? That's a funny question that you have to answer to yourself. So,
and I think one you can only answer if you've been knocked out in that particular way. I remember I was in a jiu-jitsu tournament and got choked unconscious because all good jiu-jitsu schools will tell you that if they've got your arm, you tap. If it's a choke, you fight until until it's over. So I did. And, you come to and you're like, why am I wearing a robe? And where the hell am I?
I started sweating out of nowhere, you know?
It's like, right. So it's a very peculiar thing to feel and certainly something that mentally you have to take some time to recover. Not that mine was anywhere close to what Anderson experienced.
Right.
But it leaves a lot of questions, Sean, and a couple are, is this a bigger, badder, angrier Anderson Silva, as you've been hearing leading up to this fight?
Well, I don't know. He's got Usher in his corner. That sounds pretty stupid.
Does he really want this Roy Jones Jr. fight? And if he does, he knows he has to win in order to get that. Is that the driving force? Because, let's be honest,
is that a real thing still, too?
That is a real thing.
He really wants that Roy Jones Jr. fight.
And Dana's open to it if he wins. You know, because he's been talking this week about two things. And I think, to be honest, guys, he's learned a lot from fight number one with Chael Sonnen. He's become a master at not only being in the cage and executing what he wants to execute, but he's gotten much better with his wordplay. You know, he's talked like
how I back.
Not necessarily in English.
Sorry. All right,
but
my bad.
He's talked this week in Portuguese about how he wants to compete in the 2016 Olympics in Taekwondo, and he wants to fight Roy Jones Jr. Roy Jones Jr. wants to fight in Russia. And so you have these very interesting tentacles out there that add some weight to this fight without actually talking about the fight. There is very little talk of Chris Weidman and Anderson Silva together. Like, they're not really talking trash about one another. Weidman's referring to the weird weigh-in kiss and that he's going to prove it's not a fluke. And Anderson just says, I back.
Well, I don't like how his mind's all over the place. I would like to hear Anderson talk about how focused he is and how, you know, he will be a different fighter. I mean, all, you know, Roy Jones, Olympics, Taekwondo, you know, it's like, come on, dude. Focus on what you've got in front of you.
So you are leaning in the camp that he's still so scatterbrained that this is not a serious thing?
I think when he lost, so when we did the show back then after when he lost, I said, when they do this rematch, I don't really think Anderson's going to do anything different. I think he's going to come out with his hands down. He's going to play around.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up, too, because Chris Weidman has said in some interviews when he's talking, he says, I'm training the same way. I go, I don't expect him to stop simply because I caught him when he was playing around. He's going to do the same thing. He likes to have those mind games. So I think that's what he's going to do. If he comes out and doesn't do it, I'll be surprised, but I'll adjust to it. But I think Chris Weidman's going in there thinking Anderson Silva is going to try to do the same thing. And I don't know if necessarily it's the wrong play. Because if you go out there and you do it, you're going to shock the heck out of Chris Weidman, aren't you, when you go in the cage? I don't think Chris Weidman's going to be a whole really that surprised. But, I mean, everybody watching, I mean, that's the thing you do. If you go out there with your hands down again, like you said, Sean, and he goes out there and he's bobbing his head around, we're all going to be like, what the is he doing?
We're going to say that, but let me play the devil's advocate. What if Saturday night he comes out there and in under 20 seconds ends Chris Weidman's night? Then what do we do?
Well, then
is there a trilogy then?
Well, yeah, you can say there's going to be a trilogy, but then at the same time, a lot of people go, well, you know, yeah, so he was playing around in that first fight, you know?
And that's not very fair to Chris Weidman because.
No, it's not.
Because we mentioned it earlier in the segment. Oh, if he would have gotten caught in a submission, everybody would have said, oh, what, he got caught in that submission. Chris Weidman really, he locked it in. I mean, even if he just catches him, it always seems like a submission's a bigger deal because you had to work for it and you had to get it done.
Right.
And I don't understand. MMA is about all the facets you can find of fighting and really putting the cage legally. One of those facets is striking. You don't just catch a guy. You punch a guy because you're throwing punches at his head
and you're trying to hit him.
Exactly.
Thank you.
There is no lucky punch, but I guess.
But there's that sentiment out there right now that if, like you asked the question, Eric, if Anderson knocks him out in 20 seconds, are we done with this? We shouldn't be.
Nope.
Because in the first fight, Chris Weidman knocked him out.
We shouldn't be, but you get where I'm coming from, that a lot of people would be like, yeah, he was totally clowning that first fight. That's a wrap, son.
Well, when you watch the first fight.
Let's move on to the Olympics.
When he stopped clowning around and then he actually was fighting Chris, you could see the biggest difference. It was like, wow, yeah, Chris is not ready for the champ right now.
Yes, and so there are these X factors. What are we going to get on Saturday night? And Joe pulled an amazing amount of stats, and you know, you joked when he sent it to us, who is this guy? And that's of course why we brought him on the show, because he brings these things. But one of the staggering stats,
that was a joke too, man. It was more of a compliment.
It is a compliment, and he takes it as such. But one of the staggering stats that he brought was that in the clinch position, Anderson Silva holds the record for most knockdowns in that position. If the dude gets a hold of you, you are not going to end standing. You're going to end on the ground and probably end the fight, as Chael Sonnen figured out in fight number two and a litany of other people.
Rich Franklin figured that out
in less than 1 second. I mean, there's
I don't think you can really knock out Anderson whether you have him on the fence or he's got you on the fence. I don't really see him going down.
You need space there.
You need distance to get that power, right?
Yeah, I think so, because he's just too good. Because even when they were in the center of the cage in their first fight, some punches did land. You know, he did just kind of smile. He's like, no, you got to do a little bit more than that. And then he eventually did, obviously. But, you know.
So will you think it, I know he trains.
He should be like, I stats, and then go and go up against the cage and use his, you know.
Yes, and so I guess what I'm asking is, do you think he will, we all agree in here that he's going to come with his hands down and do what he does. Is he going to do a better job of getting out of the way or just not put himself in that position? Or what, as a coach, what do you think, while you can't coach him so much, what do you think you would tell him, aside from don't get punched by Chris Weidman, what would that strategy be if he told you, I want to put my hands down and bob and weave and get out of the way and then do it when I feel like doing
it? Man, to be honest with you, if I was his trainer or if I was the coach in that corner, and you know, from the beginning to until now.
Sure,
you know,
yeah, so obviously like, not this fight.
Right,
but yes.
Yeah.
So you had some acumen and you could tell him,
a lot of influence, whatever. I think people in the MMA world and especially the fans would really, I would say, you know what? If you're not going to listen to me, I will not corner you. I will walk. I would leave that cage side. I would put my foot down like that because I don't want to be involved with someone that just, you know, totally disrespects what the sport that's given you a life, a living and taking care of your kids and all that, you know, good stuff.
And that's what you feel the first fight is.
Yeah, you know, and if you're not, it's okay, you know, because I think they even said that after round one, they're like, okay, enough, man, enough, okay.
Well, that's what I was going to say, though. He's never really listened to his corner when he's done that stuff, which he's done in quite a few fights. Even in fights where he's done it and you've seen that he's totally outclassed somebody, like the Forrest Griffin fight.
Right.
His corner's screaming at him to stop. They don't want him to do that and fight that way because one punch can end a fight.
I mean, you gotta sit there and look at it. Chris is he's a young guy, man. I'm not taking anything away from Forrest, but Forrest is, you know, older.
He's not Stephen Bonner. He's not Forrest Griffin. No, he's a guy, he's undefeated, right?
And he's a young kid. He's gonna, you know, I don't want to say he's more athletic than Anderson because that's not true, obviously, but this kid's not going to just, you know, get so frustrated and shut down. You know, it's not like that. He's going to come forward. And, you know, if I had a fighter and he totally, in a big fight, you know, millions of dollars for the title, all that, and he doesn't want to listen to me, remember when Dana said, you know what, you go put the belt on him, I'm leaving, I'd be like, whoever the second guy is in the corner, I'm like, you know what, you corner him, he's not listening to me, I'm out of here.
Stitch
bye.
Is going to have to put the belt on him if he wins.
You know what
you're
I mean?
You're referring to the Damian Maia fight.
Yeah,
he's
you're
like,
right.
You do this because I'm, this
you know what, this
ridiculous.
Is, yeah, I would have no problems walking away from a fighter that just does not want to listen. You know, and if he says, hey, no, I want to take it to the ground because I felt it, I'm stronger there, then I'll be like, yeah, you're in the fight, that's your insight, of course, take it to the ground then. But if you're not taking it to the ground and you're out there clowning around and you end up getting knocked out again, I don't want to be cage side when that happens. Right. I'd rather just watch it on TV and be like, yeah, I told that guy, he's an idiot, he doesn't listen.
I think it's interesting too, you made a great point about how he's a younger guy. He's younger than Anderson. He's not a young guy in fighting. He's 28-29, but I mean, he's been training for basically his entire life, for a lot of that time, the past what, 8 years or so.
Yeah.
How long has Anderson had that belt now? A long time.
Like 28 years.
Yeah,
or something.
It feels like a long time.
6.5-7 years.
Well, you hear a lot of talk in golf about the fact that Tiger Woods isn't what he used to be, and there's a lot of reasons for that and a lot of speculation, but one of those things is a lot of the guys coming up and doing it now, they've watched him play for a long time, so they know that's the standard and that's what they've got to do. Chris Weidman's one of the few guys that he's fought that came in relatively fresh. He's undefeated, he's never had a loss, and as he's come up, he's known that that dude over there, Anderson Silva, is the standard bearer. He knows that he's going to have to beat that guy at his game to go take the belt, so I think that's why you saw a guy who was relatively calm in that first fight, a guy who watched Anderson Silva bob and weave and do all those things where we all at home were, uh-oh, it's on now, game over. Anderson's just going to, oh, wait, what happened? Chris Weidman didn't care. He goes, I know this guy. I've watched this guy do this now for 5 years while I've been training.
Yep.
I know he's going to do it. So, you know, he had a little bit of a edge to him in some of those post-fight pressers, I remember, right after that fight. Like, I'm not stupid, guys. I've been watching him fight. I know he does that. I just kept fighting.
Yes, and what I think would be interesting for Saturday night, if instead of this modern-day post-Damian Maia, post-Abu Dhabi fight where he became what you and I referred to, Sean, at one point as a Jedi, because he kind of moved in the cage in a way that you just couldn't physically touch him, would be in this camp to rewind the clock back to the Lieben fight. Back to the Rich Franklin one fight, where this is a guy who walked in the middle of the cage, grabbed you by the back of the neck, and literally destroyed
and you were done.
Destroyed your career and walked out with the belt. I mean, and he didn't get the belt from Lieben, obviously, but his next fight was Franklin, and that was all she wrote.
I don't think Lieben touched him, but I mean, Rich got a couple of shots in there, you know? So it's not like, we know you can take a shot, Anderson. That's not the question. You don't need to put your hands down to prove that. We've seen it time and time again. Go in there and fight your best. And if your best isn't good enough, then that's cool, man. That's all we want to see is the best Anderson.
Because imagine
not
what,
the clowning
what,
around.
Imagine
Anderson.
What we would say if George St. Pierre went into that Hendricks fight with his hands down.
Yeah, what,
I mean, Hendricks would clearly be wearing the belt at this point.
Oh, 100%.
And what would we be saying about George St. Pierre and his retirement? Well, he deserved it because he clowned and disrespected the belt, but he didn't do that. He went out there and literally gave up his body, if you look at the statistics, to make sure he won that fight and then walked away to go take a break or whatever he's going to do. But I think more people have respect for that way of going out. Regardless of what you think about that fight between Hendricks and GSP, it was left up to the judges. It really wasn't on either of their shoulders, right?
Right.
This clearly was on Anderson's shoulders, and I agree with you. We want to see you win. That's why we like you. I don't like you because you can dodge your way out of punches.
Right.
While that's interesting and all, it's disrespectful to Forrest Griffin. It's disrespectful to all of the guys before you. It's certainly disrespectful what you did to Damian Maia, and I know that stuff is in the past, but you've done it, and we've seen it, and we're good. Go in there and end this.
Right. Just end it, man. Just go in there and handle him and, you know, finish him. If you can't, cool. But fight him.
Yeah, get in a fight and see what happens.
Because let's say if he loses again. I mean, they can't build a trilogy off of that, obviously.
No, well, I mean.
And who really wants to see a third? You know, I mean, some people just have. Chuck always has Tito's number in a fight.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That's true.
Chris could be that guy for Anderson.
Certainly could be. And I would respect that if he did. If we get a Jones Gustafson or a Hendricks GSP, I would see a third one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you get one of those.
If you go five rounds and it's a war and he edges you out or ends you with 4 seconds left or whatever, you know.
I think Anderson's scared of going. I mean, he's gone in the fifth round, but I think he's scared of one of those bloody. To the last second.
Well,
even in that first Chow fight, he wasn't in a war. He just got dominated and he got beat up pretty good, but he wasn't in a war by any means.
And there was a great article on Christmas Day from MMA Fighting that went through and talked to all of these people. They called them the 16 that had lost to Anderson Silva. And Chael had such an interesting snippet where he said, there's a point in every fight where you can see when a fighter wants out.
Yep.
He's been hurt so much or dominated so much or trounced so much, he wants to go home. He said, there was a moment in that fight I knew that he wanted to go home. But in my entire career in the UFC, I have never fought somebody who could recover in the same fight and get his spark back. You have to usually lose.
You're talking about when they fought the first time.
Yes, when they fought
he saw a moment where
Anderson wanted out of that cage. And he said he's seen it before in wrestling and all stuff. And then usually you beat that guy and he recoups and come back and fight you again. He goes, I've never in my life seen it happen where the guy gets his spark back in the same fight.
Yeah, I think it was in round four or something like that. Like, Anderson's, like, let in that first fight with Chael. He let his offense go, and he did some really cool, damaging stuff.
Yes.
And then Chael somehow got it back to the ground again. And I think that might be the spark he's talking about.
But
and
he said he had never experienced that, fighting another person for 25 minutes. And in the middle of that, he loses all interest and just wants to go home. And then a moment later, proverbially speaking, he goes, nah, I think I can win this one.
Right? And because remember in that, water, he said, yeah, I'll win by triangle.
Yes.
And then he actually did win by triangle. I was like, okay, that's kind of weird, but.
Oh, man.
So we will see. Anderson, Chris Weidman, 2. And when we come back, more to talk about. UFC 168 also hosts Rousey and Miesha Tate.
Pouty.
Yes, Pouty.
I'm more interested in the Brown and Barnett fight.
We'll get to it.
I thought that was the other big fight you were talking about.
We'll talk about them all.
Those are the big guys.
Okay, all right.
Read your book during the break.
We'll be back. It's Way of the Warrior.
Oh, my gosh. Baby. Follow our Twitter account at Wow Show.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans, Sean Desay from Triumph MMA. Joe is running all of the analytics, stats, and social media, so you can say hi to him on Facebook and or Twitter. Talking about UFC 168.
That's all the Usher music, in case people are wondering.
Oh, yeah, the Usher music we were playing because Usher is once again joining Anderson Silva's entourage. So
Sean brought his collection in for us to use. Thank you, Sean.
We were playing him on 45s on the record player here. So I hope you enjoy the 7-inch white label versions of Usher songs. Okay, UFC 168, as Ken called her earlier, the pouty Ronda Rousey will be taking on her quote-unquote arch nemesis, Miesha Tate, in a fight that I think we all want to go one way, but no, it will go the other way.
God, this got so much more interesting, though. If you would have told me at the beginning of 2013 that I would be so interested in a women's fight at the end of the year, I would have said you were insane until I realized one was just a pain in the behind and needs to really get her... God, I want to start cursing a lot. I just want Miesha Tate to just stop her because she is maybe one of the most miserable people to watch on TV in this fight game. You can talk about the antics of Nick Diaz, and she gets compared to him a lot. You can talk about Anderson Silva. You can talk about Chael Sonnen. You can talk about George St. Pierre being flaky. But I will say, one of the most miserable experiences I have in watching MMA is Ronda Rousey playing this pity card. She's basically got the world at her fingertips if she wants it at this point with women's MMA, and you would think that they have to drag her in and chain her up to make her do this stuff because she doesn't ever feel like she wants to be there. You alluded to it in the segment prior, Eric. Just go in and fight. That's what we want to see you do. And she does it in the cage, but she doesn't stop complaining about it at any other point.
She has won every single fight via armbar, mm-hmm. Which is, of course, is what everyone's looking out for. Her last fight with Miesha Tate, she severely damaged Miesha's arm or broke it, yes. She spent a grand total of about 12 minutes in the cage. Her fight average time is a minute and 47 seconds. So she is one who can go in there and get it done. She is not one who, as we talked about in segment one, like Anderson, she's not going to sit there and try and dodge punches and clown.
She doesn't know how to dodge a punch, though.
That might or might not be true, but what we have is somebody who is very good at a single move and one in which... I'm not sure that Miesha Tate will be able to defend against.
Look, in the cage, I do like watching Ronda fight. In the cage. Like what Ken was saying. Outside the cage, I could really care less about the girl. But in the cage, it's pretty cool to see the things that she can do, how she can overcome when Carmouche had her back and things like that. That's kind of cool. I read somewhere, I think Joe might be able to pull it up, but I read somewhere like there was a quote from Ronda. She said, you know, I'm an Olympic athlete, and this girl is a high school wrestler. And when I read that, I was like, it doesn't get any more black and white than that.
And that's a scary
fact.
Line of demarcation.
Yeah, that's it right there. I'm sorry, I want Miesha to win is just as bad as anybody else, and I don't really like Ronda's attitude. But in that cage, I mean, Ronda's going to murder this girl, dude.
And I don't – when you say stuff like that, I don't mind that. That's a fact. I'm an Olympic athlete. You went to high school. Congratulations. Yeah. That's how this fight is going to lay out. But I guess what Ken's referring to and what you, Sean, are referring to is the overall vibe is that we can't even – I think there was a moment...
We can't enjoy it if she doesn't seem to enjoy it.
Right, and I think there was a moment there was a moment that Dana clearly thought that she was going to be the Gina Carano.
No, Gina's got more class. Well, she's a better role model.
You fell in love with Gina. You wanted to see her on TV. You wanted to see her talk because she was so...
Bubbly
and enjoyed the whole process. And eventually when she didn't enjoy the process, she got acting gigs and she's gone. Terrific. Yeah. When you see her on film, everyone's like, oh, Gina Carano's here. Awesome. She's going to be in The Expendables. Awesome. What, you know, and I know Ronda's in The Expendables and all of that stuff, but it's different because she doesn't like it. She doesn't like any of it.
Well, I saw a lot of like, she's very, you know, she's, what's the word I'm looking for? Hypocrite. There you go. Because she'll bash on other celebrity women. And then she'll turn around and kind of pretty much do the same thing. Like, I think she was going off on that.
Well, let's not mince words. We've seen some of the things she does on Twitter. She doesn't seem to be the smartest person. So hypocrisy is a trade that the the idiocy comes with. You know, it's one of those things where I can't believe she's talking. You don't talk. Don't put my name in your mouth, and then she'll talk about other fighters. Right or wrong, and again, you don't have a problem with her making that comparison, that Olympic high school wrestler thing. But if somebody says something else to her along those lines, well, she can do one move. I'm really good at 10 moves. So 10 to 1. You shut up. You don't say that about me. That's her attitude. She's like a small child. And when you deal with that attitude, and there is something to be said with that comparison to Gina Carano, not necessarily even with just Gina, but the fact that UFC had built Ronda Rousey. Look at this woman. Look at this is women's MMA. You like her. I mean, she's not a Diaz in the fact that she wasn't presented like, oh, Diaz, everybody either loves to hate him or they love that he goes in with that attitude. She was presented with us at first as the women's champion, that heir apparent, so to speak, for that role of Gina Carano, and that's not her. And maybe that's unfair, but that's a little bit of what we got from the beginning, and she's just so damn miserable all the time.
Yeah. I mean, they dressed her up all whatever, and then you get to see her true colors, and I think when you're a UFC champion, you are a role model to a lot of people.
Well, and especially in this
male or female,
especially
you know?
In this situation, Sean, you're the role
first,
model
you know?
For an entire new division in the UFC. Yes, there was women in Elite XC and Strikeforce and Showtime. We get it. But obviously none of those are still here.
Right.
None of them. So that whole thing doesn't exist. And Invicta is doing very well for what Invicta is, but it's not the UFC. And so you owe it to anyone who's trying to come behind you to build them up. And you can have every feud that you want with Miesha Tate, but when the cameras are focused on you and for you to say what an honor it is to fight in the cage and what an honor it is to put women on the map and what an honor it is to supplant GSP as the biggest pay-per-view draw in the UFC, which she certainly could do, I think you owe it to everybody to act like that's something that everybody should embrace.
Yeah.
I mean, Uriah Hall had a very interesting interview because he's obviously on the cut list. He lost two in a row in the UFC, and Dana White has said he is not a fighter and he's fighting a very tough opponent in Chris Leben. But he had a quote that I wish Ronda Rousey would read every day before she got up. He, in the last 3 or 4 weeks, was at an MMA event that was outside in the wintertime watching these two guys. It was a difference of weight, so it was a terrible matchup, a difference in skill set. Again, a terrible matchup that you see a lot in pro-ammy or amateur.
Was this in Michigan?
It was not in Michigan.
Oh, sounds like a Michigan
fight.
But
he's watching this fight and going, man, I've got it really good. I should probably reevaluate what I've got in front of me and embrace it. And if
start
you don't
winning.
You know, yeah, if you don't want to be the person that hurts people, as he said after the Adam Selleck knockout kick, that's fine. But you say that you want to be the one who perfects a move and becomes a martial artist, then go do that because you have the opportunity to do that. Ronda should do the same thing. What else are you going to do? Because when you leave the UFC or get tired of the UFC and walk away, there's not the shine on you that's going to put you back into Expendables 27. You know, you're not going to be in Fast and the Furious 12 because there's no reason to put you in there because that's not shining on you. Where Gina is an affable person that people just want to be around, and she has kind of built a career in Hollywood that butted up against her.
I bet Stallone's like, man, I totally thought this girl was different. You know, I wish I didn't recruit her now.
Here's the interesting thing, though, and I wonder, and it's not brought up a lot, and I wanted to bring it up here. You have to wonder, because I think one of the things that really gets fans upset, and especially guys like you, Sean, that train and fight, is that she doesn't seem to ever have respect for her opponents. But does she need that when she goes into the cage? Because she said before, she seems to respect a lot of those folks that were on her team in The Ultimate Fighter. She mentioned the fact that there's not going to be a Gina Carano hole, since we're talking a lot about her today, if she were to leave. So she seems to have some respect for fighters in general. Just when they're in the cage with her, when they're across the ring, it's a situation where she doesn't seem to have any at all. Does she need that, though, to go in and do what she does, Sean? Because she has zero respect for them or their skill set, so she goes in, she grabs an arm, and she tries to tear it off. Is that part of her mentality she needs to win these fights, but is making her a less popular fighter because of it?
Well, I can't remember what fight it was, but there was one fight that she did in Strikeforce, and the girl tapped and she let go because she did kind of have like respect for the fighter. And then, like, I think Mazzagatti was like, no, I didn't say stop. And then, so she made sure never make that mistake again. That's why she holds arm bars longer and stuff. So,
and Ken, to you,
but I don't know, but the whole respect thing, I mean, she's a different person now. I mean, she's changed, obviously. So.
And to your point, does she need to respect him in the cage? No. Does she need to let go before the ref says no? But if we go back 2 weeks and play that horrific sound clip of where she's sitting with Ariel Helwani, John Anik, and Kenny Florian, and she won't even play the game, that you need to do. I'm sorry. It comes with the belt.
Yeah.
That's why George left, because he doesn't want to do it anymore. I have respect for that. You don't want to play the game anymore, and you walk away. So if you don't want to sit on there, and you can't even look at Misha Tate because of what she does to you,
right.
I don't give it up. You get to do something. If there's somebody in your life, or Sean, well, maybe not you, because you obviously run a stable of fighters, but myself, Ken, or Joe, if there's somebody at our workplace that we can't stand to the level that Ronda Rousey can't stand Misha Tate, we're stuck. Our only choice is to quit that job or hope that that person gets fired, right? She has the bonus of, I hate this person so much that they're going to put me alone in a cage for 25 minutes with her.
Can we get that set up here?
Right. Can we get that set up here? Who wouldn't want to do that?
Yeah,
right.
and to be fair,
and
we
get paid a lot more money for
it. Paid to do it.
When Nick Diaz was doing the same thing with some of the press, we said the same thing on the air. Look, get it together, and you've got to do this part of it to do the part that you like, which is the fighting. And the difference here is I don't even know if I feel like Ronda even likes the fighting. She goes in and she does it, and she's top of her game, Olympic versus high school wrestler usually, but I don't know if I want to watch somebody that miserable, and I know that you said she's changed. I don't think she's changed. I think we're seeing a lot more of her, and that's who she is. And I don't think that reality TV is real by any means, but I think we've seen enough instances of Ronda Rousey being pouty that it's a fair assumption at this point. She's kind of a pain. That's all I got there.
And we will find out tomorrow night at UFC 168 what is going to happen. The other fight that I know Sean wants to talk about before Josh Gross joins us here in a second is Josh Barnett versus Travis Brown. A very interesting heavyweight bout between two guys that I think everyone in this room feels is a win-win fight for us.
It's a win-win.
You know, Josh Barnett wins. I'm excited to see what's next for him. Travis Brown wins. I'm excited to see what's next for him because they're both contenders in my mind to go up against Kane, and I think that would be an interesting fight regardless of which one of those guys wins.
Yeah, I mean, the winner should get a title shot, but Kane's out to like the end of 2014,
just
right?
About the end of 2014, yeah. So I mean, maybe there. I mean, you may be looking at one of the two guys that'll fight for an interim if they decide to do that. I guess it depends on how well Kane comes along.
Interim heavyweights are not; those aren't boring fights. I like those; are cool.
They're not. I know that Dana doesn't want to do that. He said it, but you know, come March or April, when you see how Kane's really doing, you might not have a choice because you can't really not have a heavyweight champ, especially when you've got these Fox cards to fill, and you need to put at least one of them with a worthwhile heavyweight bout to get people to tune in. You know,
you got to.
You know, we would love to see a world where a Demetrius Johnson could do the same thing, but that's not the world that we live in. We need a heavyweight bout. So we get a great one here with Barnett coming over from Pride. He's, of course...
Who do you think wins this one? This is a tough one to call, this fight.
Well, Brown is the second... tallest fighter in the UFC roster with Stefan Struve returning, so he's obviously the first on that list. If he weren't to return, Brown would be the first. Barnett's such a wily fighter, man.
Dude, if Barnett's take Brown to the ground, that kind of rhymed, but it would be good. I think Barnett will pull off a submission. He's mean on the ground, dude. But
he is very
stand
mean.
Up, I gotta lean towards Travis, man.
I don't think that that's a misrepresentation of how this fight will go down. I think on the ground it gets very, very interesting.
Yeah. Shoot fighter versus stand up.
Yes,
boom.
And a guy who's ridiculous on the ground in some ways that you probably wouldn't want him to be ridiculous, as you alluded to a second ago. He's not very nice on there.
Like, no.
You know, if you think Ronda Rousey breaking Misha Tate's arm is mean, Travis might lose the whole arm, and Josh would wear it as a belt to the press conference.
You ever listen to the way Josh talks about like how he wants to like murder somebody in there? I mean, it's kind of like, whoa, easy guy.
Yeah, and he really encapsulates this kind of like Viking berserker spirit.
Totally.
And what I like about him is, going in there, you think all of this old English speak, and I want to murder this guy, and I want to rip him limb from limb, and it gets a little Shakespearean and a little much, I think, for a lot of people. But what's fun is at the end of that Mir fight, he said, we're both warriors, and we went in here to do a job, and I was just able to do it better, and I have a lot of respect for my opponent that I just trounced, but that's the game. I'm here to trounce everybody, and I'm going to trounce Travis Brown, and then I'm going to take this belt. And while he also, to Ken's point about Ronda Rousey, probably not the best ambassador for the sport. No. Very fun guy to see watch. And
Travis Brown?
No, Travis Brown is a great
ambassador. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Barnett's not very great on the stick on Fox, let's say.
He's got all the I know Sean hates this. He's got all those years in pro wrestling in Japan, so he knows how to promote a fight, and that's what he does.
Of course he does. But I guess he's always playing the part to go to professional wrestling.
Right.
He's always playing the part of the heel. He's not the guy who's going out there and going, this was a tremendous fight between two tremendous athletes, and I cannot wait to see what happens to Frank Mir in his future. He goes, no, I just murdered Frank Mir. Yeah. Let's move on to the next thing. Give me my belt.
There you go.
And so, he says it with a smile, too. That's really cool.
He does have a very creepy smile when he says that sort of stuff. All right. And as we have done before, we put the fight picks on Facebook, and you can play along with us this time as Joe is setting up a contest, and we will have a bunch of DVDs to give away, including the Ronda Rousey Carmouche on DVD. Well, it's got Machida on it. I know you're a big fan of Machida. Why are you shaking your head? We're just trying to give stuff away.
No. He hates Christmas.
I know. Okay, well, pretend we're giving it away for New Year's. And jump on the
Facebook
page.
I'll celebrate any country's New Year's.
Jump on the Facebook page at Wow Show and put your picks in. If you're able to beat one of us or all of us except for Joe, who seems to go perfect every single week, you will walk away with one of those DVDs on Facebook at Wow Show. When we come back, Josh Gross will join us and talk about the top of 2013 as well as what else is going on at UFC 168. It is Way of the Warrior.
Way of the Warrior.
Way of the Warrior, it is your MMA show talking UFC 168. It is always an honor to have Josh Gross from ESPN on, and he joins us right now. Happy holidays, Josh. How are you?
I'm fine. Same to you.
This is going to be a crazy evening on Saturday night and lots to talk about. First and foremost, we were talking earlier about Ronda Rousey, and I wanted to get your take because she had just sworn on SportsCenter probably an hour and a half ago. And we were talking about, do you think she needs to maybe be a better ambassador for the sport, or does this fit with what she needs to be doing right now for female MMA?
I think Ronda Rousey needs to be Ronda Rousey, and there are some rough edges with that, but it's what makes her compelling in some ways. She is not one to bite her tongue. She has spoken openly about her distaste for being on The Ultimate Fighter and a lot of the people around the sport. She's a unique character, so I would say to Ronda Rousey, she's had a lot of success, and she should just keep doing what she's doing. Maybe quit swearing on SportsCenter, though. That might be one thing.
But I guess that's my point, is we've talked about this, and I know you and I have talked maybe once or twice about this. When you look at guys like GSP who just get kind of tired of, the car wash, as they call it, and want to get out of it and take a break from it. You see Nick Diaz, who clearly hates the press part of the fight. Is this something that must be a mandatory for champs, or do you think that Ronda will continue to kind of have the success that she has given the rough edges, even though she technically right now is really the only champ that kind of acts like that?
No, look, Ronda will continue. She's done a lot of press. It's not like she's skipping out on her press duties leading up to a fight. It's not a Nick Diaz situation where the guy just no-shows. So that's Ronda Rousey's doing her part as a champion in the UFC in terms of generating media and everything else. But she's also an individual. And I think we saw there was a period in the UFC where everybody was walking on eggshells, not wanting to offend anybody. The sport was offensive to some people. Some of the way that fighters carried themselves were offensive to people. I'm talking about the early 2000s to the mid 2000s.
Sure.
Even the rules did. The referees were skittish at some points, and that they wanted to fight. They wanted to make sure the fights were stopped too soon. I think all that is done. Mixed martial arts is a sport that's entrenched in North America. It's a niche sport, but it's still one that's not going to go away. And I want to see the athletes be themselves. So Ronda again has had a ton of success. No matter what we think of her outside the cage or what anybody else says about her. Bottom line, if she keeps winning and is doing what she's doing, I think she can handle the press. I take issue with guys like George St. Pierre, who wants to be considered the greatest of all time, but the greatest of all time doesn't complain about too much fame and too much media responsibilities. That just doesn't come with it.
Fair enough. Josh Gross from ESPN joining us. An excellent transition to my next question, and that is about Chris Weidman and Anderson Silva. There are many people that have talked about Anderson being the one that lost that fight himself and not that Chris was able to find a hole and connect with Silva's chin and end that fight. What do you expect you will see from Anderson on Saturday night? Do you think it'll be more of the same, or will he be, as rumored all week long leading up to the fight, a more vicious Anderson Silva?
Well, like, I fully expect him to be vicious. I mean, he's been vicious throughout his career, generally. I mean, for the most part, outside of the fights with Talis Latis and Damian Maya, where he was just so bored he didn't want to be in there. And you can understand why. There were really no challenges to him. I don't know what Anderson Silva is going to do. He talked about that he recognized that he made basic mistakes in that fight with Chris Weidman the first time in July, that he's rectified those mistakes, that he's going to come in and be more intent on being the guy that maybe we saw against Chris Lieben or Rich Franklin. But I'm not so sure that'll matter. I mean, yes, Anderson Silva is an incredible fighter, and he has been for many, many years. But you know what? Chris Weidman's 10-0 and knocked him out in July, and there's nothing saying that he couldn't be 11-0 late Saturday night and be looked at as, you know, really one of the shining stars or potential stars in this sport. So it's one of these fights that for the last 6 months I've kicked around. A lot of people have gone back and forth on, you know, what's going to happen? Is Anderson going to take it seriously? What's the game plan going to be? I don't know. I'm expecting a great fight on Saturday night, and really sort of that's where I'm leaving it. You know, I have a pick and I have a feeling, but at the end of the day, those are just feelings. I don't have a really good sense one way or another what Anderson's going to do. I think the most important thing for him would be, you know, you're Anderson Silva. Just have, you know, you've done this for so long and you're so confident. Don't all of a sudden feel like you have to make changes just because you got caught. And Chris Weidman caught him. I mean, that wasn't a fluke. I don't think that was a fluke. Silva made a mistake, but Weidman was good enough to capitalize when many, many other fighters were not.
Absolutely. And I guess I wasn't saying that I believe it's a fluke. I was more saying to your Ronda Rousey point, you like Ronda Rousey because Ronda Rousey is Ronda. And we like Anderson because of the antics, but mostly because of the winning. That's what makes the mythology. And I guess I was just getting your take on whether or not that's going to be important to him. Probably not based on your comments. But
I don't think so. And I'm not saying that you were calling it a fluke, but a lot of people were. I mean, a lot of people still on Twitter today, I was chatting with people, and you know, you hear the fluke thing over and over and over again. And that's not fair to Weidman. But it sets up the scenario now where he's walking in as the champion, as the underdog, as all these things, and you know, people are not giving him his due. So I think in the end, coming in under the radar is probably a good thing for him. And the fact that there's that other title fight with Ronda Rousey, really no one's paying attention or very little attention to Chris Weidman. He walks in the champion in the main event. So it's an interesting dynamic.
It certainly is, and we talked about that a little bit earlier, just how the build-up to this fight has been so interesting and not focused on Weidman at all and how peculiar that sort of is. Another big fight at UFC 168, Josh Barnett, Travis Brown, they've been tested, what, 16 times? Is that what I read? 11 times with Nevada testing, Josh?
Oh, is that right? I haven't seen specific numbers. Are you talking about Barnett specifically or both those guys?
Both of them, because they went through the testing. And I guess my question to you is going through this once or twice with Josh Barnett, is this enough to kind of quell the naysayers? And we talked about the naysayers for Anderson Silva. Is this enough to kind of quell them who will constantly look at Josh as somebody who tests positive all the time?
Well, he doesn't test a positive all the time. He tested positive three times, which is plenty.
You're on Twitter enough to know that that's really all it takes for people to say
no,
all the time.
No question. You're labeled a cheater or a steroid user. That's going to hang with Barnett the rest of his career. There's nothing you can do to change that. But, you know, this is a sport of what have you done for me lately, as most sports are. It's also a major opportunity for redemption. It's a one-on-one sport. You can climb up from nothingness, and Barnett has brought himself off the deck to have a great opportunity here against a very dangerous fighter in Travis Brown. If he wins this fight, I mean, he's right there in line for a UFC heavyweight championship shot. And as far-fetched as that would have seemed 3 or 4 years ago, you know, here we are. So Barnett's very talented, and for all his troubles throughout his career, and you have to acknowledge those, you know, he has justifications and excuses and explanations for all of it, but, you know, you can choose to believe what you want. I think at the end, if he doesn't test positive for this fight and he wins, then that's all people are going to care about.
Josh Gross from ESPN joining us. One last question before I let you go. I know Dana has said no, but what's your sense in a time frame with Kane as to whether or not we would talk the dreaded I word for the heavyweight championship in 2014?
What's that, interim title?
Yes, sir.
I take Dana White at his word, so I don't think so. The stuff I'm hearing about Velasquez is he'll be on a pretty good timetable to recovery. The surgery has already happened, so they know all that. I don't think you'll see an interim title. Who would you put it between at this point? I think that's also a factor for the division. It's not like you have the depth that you see at other weight classes where you can make a legitimate title fight. Everybody sees Cain Velasquez as champion. He just needs to get healthy and get back in the cage again.
Josh Gross joining us. UFC 168 on pay-per-view this weekend. Josh, get back to what you are doing. Have a wonderful weekend and a blessed new year, my friend.
All right, cheers. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye. And we will catch you on Twitter and Facebook. All you got to do is search WOW Show. We'll have the results all weekend long, plus your picks on our Facebook page at WOW Show. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show. Catch you next week.
Follow our Twitter account at WOW Show. They say life is...